1, 2, 3. Acoustic Encounters with David Dogrisman and Danny Barnes.
Hello, acoustic music lovers. You're listening to Acoustic Encounters. I'm Danny Barnes.
And this is David Dogrisman.
All right. Bill Monroe. We're going to talk about Dog Plays Big Mon. It's a lot of characters on that one, too, playing Bill Monroe music.
My tribute to Bill, and who was fondly nicknamed Big Mon.
Big Mon. Was that short for money or Monroe, or what do you think that was short for?
I never heard that
Big
take
Mon.
On.
We always had a nice suit.
I met him on a Monday.
Yeah. Talked about mundane affairs. Dog Plays Big Mon.
Yeah, well, this is kind of my tribute to the father of bluegrass. I had a gig at the Kentucky Fried Chicken Bluegrass Festival in Louisville. Colonel Sanders was there, and it was on Bill Monroe's
Did
birthday.
Did you get any of that good fried chicken? Do they have any of that chicken right there?
I might have. Finger licking good. It was Bill Monroe's birthday. I guess it's September 13th, I believe. And Bill was there. And I wrote this tune, Happy Birthday, Bill Monroe, to play for him at this gig, which I did. And I think this project I put together around 2011. Dog Plays Big Mon. Bill Monroe tunes and Bill Monroe-related tunes, of which I had recorded in various places, and about half of it hadn't been released when we put this out. And that tune, Happy Birthday, Bill Monroe, is on there.
Can we listen to Happy Birthday, Bill Monroe?
Here it is.
Thank you.
Who all's playing with you, David?
Well, that's Mike Marshall and Daryl Anger playing twin fiddles, Tony Rice on guitar, and Jerry Douglas on dobro, and Rob Wasserman on the bass.
Wow. All at your place there?
No, that was recorded in 1750 Arch Studios. That was for Warner Brothers, that Dog Grass album, I believe. Yeah.
Did Bill hear the tune?
You know, I honestly don't know. He was there, and I dedicated it to him. I don't know if he heard it or not. You know, he never talked to me much about my music, other than telling me things like, you don't want to play something too fast. I don't know if he ever heard it. I hope he did.
Unless I think he would have dug
maybe
it.
Maybe he didn't dig it. I don't know.
No, I bet he dig it. I'm sure he did.
Those little stops in there, to me, they were like Bill Monroe-esque.
Yes. Some of the motifs were sort of like drawn from some of the catalog of his stuff, you know?
Yeah. It was a big influence, but probably in the biggest way was he told Frank Wakefield and anybody else that if you were copying him too accurately, he would say, well, you got my style, now go get your own, you know? That was a valuable lesson. Be yourself.
Be yourself just like everybody else. Hey, can we play? I'd like to hear that Uncle Pen.
Okay, yeah, that's the Retrograss.
Yeah, that's what boys. I wanted to talk about that. What I liked about it was a completely different take.
That it was.
Can you talk about that? Even just to talk about the players and everything.
Well, it's myself and John Hartford and Mike Seeger. I'm trying to think of what I played on this. Let's listen to it. Then it'll remind me.
To the break of day, Carl would holler, do-si-do, your Uncle Pen was ready to go. Late in the evening, about sundown, high on the hill and above the town, Uncle Pen played the fiddle, oh, how it rang. You could hear it talk, you could hear it sing. Jenny Lind, to me that's where fiddling began. Late in the evening, about sundown, high on the hill and above the town, Uncle Pen played the fiddle, Lord, how it rang. You could hear it talk, you could hear it sing. Time for him to go. Late in the evening, about sundown, high on a hill and above the town, Uncle Pen played the fiddle, Lord, how it rang. You could hear it talk, you could hear it sing.
That's a cool take on that.
Yeah, I guess I'm playing guitar banjo. That's a Gibson Mastertone GB3.
Wow. Mike's on the banjo, the clawhammer banjo there?
Yeah, and John's playing fiddle.
And the bass singing.
Yeah, he's singing the bass. I'm singing the high, screwed up part.
He sounds a little bit like the guy from the Charlie Poole's band on the fiddle in a couple of those quotes that I really dug.
Posey Rohrer, yeah. We were trying to take more contemporary country and bluegrass tunes back a few decades and play them in earlier styles, which were highly individualistic, all those styles.
Uh-huh.
And so we were kind of in that mold.
That's a pretty good idea. Was that your idea, David?
Well, it was my idea to apply it to...
Didn't y'all do like Sitting on the Dock of the Bay and stuff like
that? Yeah, we did. I got the idea from a band called the Anachronic Jazz Band. There used to be a jazz record store in the Sunset District of San Francisco that I used to occasionally drop in on. And I can't remember the guy's name who owned the store, but we became friendly. And one day he gave me this cassette tape of this band. And what they did was take modern jazz tunes like Giant Steps and Well You Needn't and play them in Dixieland style. And it gave me this idea that, yeah, you could play newer tunes in older styles. Because usually, as time marches on, older tunes get modernized. This is kind of like the opposite. But a good tune, you can play in any style. And so what we were trying to do is, I took that idea, try to apply it to country and bluegrass music, and rock and roll, too. We did the Hound Dog in the style of Charlie Poole.
Did you have to sell it to Mike and John, or were they on board pretty quick? It's a pretty good idea.
They were into it. We kind of formed this friendship between the three of us when we visited Ralph Rinsler when he was very sick, a little before he passed away. And we spent a weekend with Ralph playing music for him. And I pitched this idea to those guys, and they liked it.
It sounds cool. That's one of my favorite things you've ever done is that project. Just because it's just so different and it's so refreshing. It's cool to hear just a different take on stuff. It's just really cool, I think.
That was a lot of fun, hanging with those guys and working on this. It was a real good week. And that's where Sam Grisman played on his first session.
He was
8 years old.
Well, hey, is it possible to play the new Mule Skinner Blues off this record?
Yeah. This has got the great Vassar Clements and me, just the two of us. And of course, Vassar played the fiddle on the 1950 recording, which Bill titled The New Mule Skinner Blues. I believe I played Bill's kickoff on this.
Man, yeah. I love your your backup plan?
Oh, well, I'm just trying to stay with it, you know. Just trying to be Bill Monroe. And it was great to get to play with a lot of these people, especially Vassar, who was really, I mean, how much more bluegrass could you get than that? He's one of the originators, he's one of the creators of bluegrass inspiration. Amazing musician and a great guy.
Yeah.
Really sweet guy.
I only met him a couple of times. He's always real nice to me. He was the first guy I jammed with that was really good, you know, when I was 14.
Wow. Olden and the Way, we were all awestruck. He was really at his peak.
I dug the way he wore those kind of like rayon shirts, like you imagine Tony Tedesco playing golf in. They kind of, you know, the white patent leather shoes, plaid pants, you know,
right.
The whole, like late 60s Hugh Hefner kind of vibe, you know. Smoked a pipe too, I think.
Yeah, I've got one of his pipes.
You did? Know?
Yeah. His daughter sent it to me.
Did
after
you ever smoke
passed
a pipe?
Very briefly when I was in college.
Did he have it going a lot when you're working with
him? Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did. We were all smoking something else.
He had that fiddle with that head on it, on the headstock.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you know anything about that fiddle?
I know John Hartford gave it to him.
No kidding.
Yeah. He got a sound, and I mean, there's nobody that plays anything like him, really.
Yeah.
I mean, and he never played the same thing twice, even though you can hear in that recording him quoting his own solo and extending it and permutating it. His fingers, to me, they were like pistons. I mean, they just automatically, intonation is so acute and accurate. And he played these double and sometimes even triple stops. He was very influenced by big band music. He told me that. He would be trying to imitate the horn section. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that stuff, but steeped in the blues. I think Bill Monroe preferred Kenny Baker. He always said that Kenny was the best, but to me, Vassar was steeped in that blues. And
they both were kind of swing fans, I guess, too. Right?
Yeah, Kenny, they were. Kind
of had
yeah.
He had his sort of swing element, too, a little bit, I think.
But Kenny was never really on the dark side, you know?
Yeah, and he was never also really kind of like winging it, going for it. Like, was Vassar... You'd think he's never going to get back, and he'd get it back, you know?
Bill didn't like too much improvisation. Pete Roan and I opened for some gigs with Bill and the Bluegrass Boys at McCabe's. You ever play McCabe's?
I sure did.
Yeah. I may have told you this story before, but after one of those shows, Bill told Pete Roan and me that he wanted to be our manager.
Whoa.
Imagine that.
Wow.
I could have been a contender, Danny.
I wanted to play that Little Georgia Rose.
Okay. I believe this is from the first gig of the David Grisman Bluegrass Experience. I hired Dell and his whole band to be my band for a couple of weeks. This was the first show. I think this was in West Virginia, that radio show called The Mountain Stage. This is where that's from.
Way down in the Blue Ridge Mountains, way down she's my little Georgia Rose.
That's some good bluegrass down in West Virginia.
Yeah. There's two fiddle players. I want to have twin fiddles, as they say. Both these guys played with Del McCurry off and on. John Glick and Warren Blair. Not too well known, but they're great fiddle players, and we really liked having the double fiddles. They were both from the Baltimore area. Ronnie McCurry wrote a mandolin tune called Baltimore Johnny. Have you heard that?
Mm-mm.
That's dedicated to this guy, John Glick.
Mm.
Real good fiddle player. He sits in with Tony Rice Unit on one of the live recordings we put out. And Warren Blair, his dad was a fiddle player named Kimball Blair. And early on, he was one of the people I recorded with my Wallensack. I just wanted to record anything traditional. I heard about this guy, Kimball Blair, and went over his house and recorded him playing a whole bunch of fiddle tunes.
Did he just play by himself?
Or? Yeah, I believe so. Somewhere I probably have that tape. I just wanted to learn stuff. You know, it was hard to find all this great material. You know, there were very few albums out in the early 60s, and I knew there were all these great tunes. I just wanted to learn everything I could find. Looking for it. Plus, it was fun recording something. Somehow, when you record music, you listen to it harder.
I think it's cool if you're not playing, too. You can really kind of focus, you know.
Right.
Because as a player, you're always kind of running in your head, but when you're recording, it's kind of cool to just
right.
Observe.
I never like recording and playing.
I don't like that either. I have to do it all the time, and I'm not very good at it. It's hard.
Well, it sounds like you're pretty good at it.
Well, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's like pitching a baseball game and building a doghouse at the same time, you know?
Yeah. Well, this is not that complicated. You just put the microphone up somewhere and push record. Make sure you get the tape threaded right. Then you get to listen to it back later.
Hmm. There's two other ones I wanted to play, if it's okay. Can we play In the Pines with Doc Watson?
Oh, yeah, In the Pines.
I remember... In 1960, I'm going to say this was 61, it could have been 62, David, I'm not really sure. I was kind of breaking into the folk revival, paying the dues that you have to pay. I was playing in a little place called Gertie's Folk City, scared half to death every time I got up on the stage. And some folks from Passaic, New Jersey came in, three young folks, maybe might have been four, Richard Rensselaer and his sister, and that young man is sitting right there. I can call him young because he's a whole lot younger than I am. And he was 17 then, and Richard got around and he said, Doc Watson, ask David Grisman to come up there. He's got his mandolin with him. Ask him to come up and pick one with you. Well, I don't know if he was reluctant or not, but he sure enjoyed it. We picked this one right here.
I credit you as starting my career, Doc, because... That's the first pro that ever invited me onto a stage.
Now, wait a minute. I wasn't a pro then. I told
you,
you
were,
scared to death.
Always a pro.
All right. Start off that lonesome song we played that night.
Recording there.
Oh, thanks, man.
Sound great there.
I think that might have been from one of the gigs we played around 1997, I think. Maybe from Watsonville, California, or somewhere else.
Grissmanville. Well, hey, David, What do you think about when you listen back and hear these records, man? You must be awful proud to be able to put all this great stuff out.
Well, it's a lot of good memories there. Of course, so many of these folks are no longer here, although they are here to me, hearing it. They left a lot of good imprints, footprints. It's just been a real privilege to get to know people like Mike Seeger and John Hartford and Doc Watson and Vassar Clements. Of course, Ralph Rinsler, he started compiling Bill Monroe's discography, and it went down to Decca Records and got into their files and discovered there were a lot of out-of-print, never-released recordings, which he then proceeded on getting a lot of it released.
Wow.
On that record, The High Lonesome Sound.
Mm-hmm.
To write the notes for that album, he interviewed Bill Monroe and played every song on the record and asked him about it. And I taped the interview for him in his apartment. Part of that tape is on the project.
In making bluegrass, you kind of remembered a lot of the sounds you heard as a boy and put them all together with something special of your own.
Well, I used stuff that I had heard from a little boy and notes that, you know, that just sunk in my mind that I kept, you know, and stuff that I knew that would help, that I'd like to hear, and I knew the public would like to hear. And that's where it's helped a many fiddler down in that country, see, but me giving him, you know, ideas and things that I knew about it. If you study music deep enough, old-time music, well, you get to learn what's good for it and what's not good for it. And you can't just play it now and not pay attention to it and do that. You got to be thinking about it maybe when you're working, doing other things. You've got to keep your mind on that music to really get deep in it. And I think I've studied old-time music deeper than anybody in the country. I was around 20 years old when my Uncle Penn died. And I've kept his numbers on till now and haven't ever recorded them, you see. And that's a long time to not do something. Just be saving them. Let's see, that's how many years? 33, 4 years, you see. And but I that's something I want to do. All and put on record and as near the way that he played them as I can, so they won't be just thrown away, you know, and forgot about. Had the prettiest shuffle on the bow that you've ever watched. My mother could play fiddle too, some. Pretty good fiddler, and could sing. If you'll listen to my work, you'll see that there's blues in it. You know, colored man ain't the only man that's ever had blues.
Yeah.
And he ain't the only fella that's ever had hardships that he went through a lot. And if you're down in the dumps, you like to play the blues. If you figure you've been mistreated, why, you still want to sing the blues. You don't want to tell your story to somebody because you don't want to put yourself on him, you know, but you'll sing about it. You get enjoyment out of it. If you blue, well, you get enjoyment out of singing the blues. And you'll write them, and you'll add them to different numbers, and you'll put them in places through numbers that you want to put them in, the notes and things. So I think that you can watch people's, any kind of work they do in the way of music and tell pretty well through their life what they've gone through, if you watch it close enough. Now, you know Hank Williams had a lonely life. He had something to write about. If you've got something to write about, really, you can write good songs. There's so many of the people that's come along today that sings like the other man sings. You take a fella that's had money all of his life, and his parents had money, and he got a good education, and never wanted for anything. He never had anything that had the blues about much. Had everything he wanted. You got to take a fellow that's broke a lot of time to really have the blues.
Isn't there more to it than just being broke, though? Isn't it a kind of lonesome feeling? Like?
That's right. But you tie it all in there together, and your man is really down.
Yeah.
You ever have the blues?
Yeah, I think I have.
Big man.
Was there another one you wanted to listen to?
Well, I wouldn't mind playing that Olden in the Way cut, that Wicked Path of Sin.
Okay.
Can we play that one?
Yeah.
Oh, what I lose.
Now, there's just some bluegrass music right there.
Yeah, well, that's one of the classic quartets that Bill Monroe recorded with Flat and Scruggs. I believe those gospel songs, they just had guitar and mandolin and quartet singing. That was Vassar singing bass there.
It sounded like he was playing some thumb rhythm on the fiddle there a little bit, maybe.
Maybe he was, yeah.
And was Jerry playing banjo?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did he sing on that?
Yeah. Sang baritone.
Pete sounds good on the guitar. His guitar playing sounds good.
Before Vassar, you know, Richard Green played a bunch of gigs with Olden in the Way, and we did a radio broadcast from the record plant in Sausalito's recording studio. And I have a recording of that. I bet you somewhere is a beautiful sounding tape of that, but Richard sounds, you'd be surprised at some of that stuff.
Well, he's good. He should.
Yeah, that was early on, you know. He was pretty straight on that. Sometimes he gets out of line, as Bill Monroe would. People like Bill Keith and Richard Green and Peter Rowan, some of these younger guys from the urban areas, really kind of pushed Bill Monroe at a time when it was good for him, I think. I did play three songs with Bill Monroe on guitar when Pete Rowan was late for a gig at the Club 47. And then there's a record that Ralph Rinzer put together for a Smithsonian Folkways called Bill Monroe Off the Record, comprised of live recordings. And there's a cut on there that was recorded at Tex Logan's house. Tex Logan, the fiddle player, had these great once-a-year parties where Bill Monroe and his band would be there, and all kinds of bluegrass musicians would come. And I ended up playing bass on one of these songs that ended up on that record, Cotton Eye Joe. But I always wanted to write a song, which I still may write, called Everyone's Played with Bill Monroe But Me.
Oh.
Of course, being a mandolin player, well, Joe Stewart, he got to play mandolin with Bill Monroe. And I did too, actually, on stage a few times. Bill Monroe is one of my big influences on the mandolin and influenced all the bluegrass mandolin players, even Jesse McReynolds. I was listening the other day to a double LP set that Jim and Jesse put out of live radio that we may put out. It's been out of print for a long time, but Jesse plays Bluegrass Breakdown on there.
Wow.
Yeah. So all the bluegrass mandolin players owe a great debt to Bill Monroe. He's the father of bluegrass.
The father of bluegrass.
Of course, they don't really know who the mother was. Well, thanks for helping me do this stuff, Danny.
It's fun, David. It's really fun. I enjoy listening to your music.
I appreciate it.
Hearing all these great players and hearing the stories. Thanks, David.
Thank you.
See you later.
All right. That's all we have.